Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Arr!
Today is January 12th, 2014, and this is episode 44, 2013, the gaming year in review. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be looking at 3013, the year that was.
Wait, 3013? Did we just hop in a TARDIS?
Right. No, that was a typo in my show roll. We are looking at 2013, the year that was.
Wait, I thought we were talking about the PlayStation 400.
Right. But first, I want to sincerely apologize for missing out on a prime pun opportunity last week in our episode, Beyond Thunderdome, The Bone Arrives. Obviously should have been called Beyond Thunderbone.
Thunderbone!
As was pointed out to me by a listener. We regret this missed opportunity and vow to try harder in the future. We also apologize for being so late on our 2013 year in review episode. We were sidelined by a series of illnesses that are fortunately now in the past.
Boo!
So, in any event, before we get to the discussion, we have a pretty full slate of our usual follow-ups and news bits. So, in the interest of your time and our own, Slagkick, let's get this party started.
Alright, Skullgirls Encore is going to include the typing of the Skullgirls Encore.
What?
So as you might guess, it will involve timed typing exercises to award damage based on your accuracy and swiftness. So, kind of a cross between, like, a Typing of the Dead and a fighting game mechanic.
Well, since this is in a fighting game, that sounds appropriate.
Yes.
That's exciting. Like, that just seems really weird and cool.
It seems like typing of the is very relevant right now.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. Why don't you take this next one, too?
Rocksmith 2014 has a Muse DLC pack. It's a 5-song DLC pack, including Stockholm Syndrome, Supermassive Black Hole, Time is Running Out, Hysteria, and Muscle Museum.
Yes!
And, of course, this teaches you how to play real guitar, so if you want to be, like, super awesome at Muse songs, then you should download these.
You know, my problem is, I wanted to get Rocksmith to practice bass, and I love Muse, they're like one of my favorite acts of all time, but like, I ain't trying to do Muse bass lines.
Yeah, they're pretty crazy. This, of course, joins the previously released Radiohead and Green Day packs, which one of the two are probably actually great, and one of them you don't need Rocksmith to learn how to play.
Next up, we have news that Dragon's Crown is getting some new content. It's getting a new level cap. The level cap is going from level 99 all the way up to 255. And to go along with that, VanillaWare has introduced a new ultimate difficulty level that will unlock once players have cleared the ninth layer of the Labyrinth of Chaos! I'm sorry, that name just required that. In addition to that, they're also introducing a new dungeon called the Tower of Mirages.
Yeah, I have to admit, I kind of avoided this game because of the problematic issues we had talked about this year, but
supposedly, as a game, it's great.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So I'm starting to get weakened. I was almost thinking that I might go even maybe today and try to find a used copy of this, because I'm talking about it, and people are basically describing it as, like, the Capcom Dungeons & Dragons games, but with, like, more RPG elements. Mm. And, like, the more I think about it, the more it's like, I am in the market for a game that plays like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that everyone who has, played it enjoys it a lot.
And I'm looking at this character art on this article that we're looking at over on Joystick, and, like, that character design looks pretty badass, so
yeah.
Starting to have a hard time staying away from it, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, why don't you take this one?
Class of Heroes 2G is coming to PlayStation 3 this year. That is the publisher Monkey Paw working with Gaijin Works, and they are going to be bringing over Class of Heroes 2G, which is kind of a follow-up to Clash of Heroes 2, which was on PSP. And, yeah, if that's the type of game you're in the market for, then that's coming at some point this year.
Excellent. There's a new trailer for Persona Q, Shadow of the Labyrinth. This is, of course, the chibi Persona game that's coming to the 3DS. I find it most interesting because the character Vincent from the Catherine game is present in this trailer, getting shot at by Aegis, the Persona.
Interesting.
So yeah, I'm really, really, really excited to see how Vincent fits into this puzzle, because I was a huge fan of Catherine. We've talked about this here on the show so many times, I wouldn't even know at this point where to begin other than to say it was amazing. So if Vincent is in that game, I cannot wait to play it. That is going to be really awesome to see him pop up. We also have news that Geist Crusher, you may recall, this is the Sentai Monster Hunter-style game for kids in Japan, apparently was a bit of a flop, unfortunately. But Capcom is continuing to support the game. They're releasing new downloadable content. They're still releasing the Guy Metal toys that they're putting out in Japan. So, you know, I like to see this. I hope sales for the game pick up when people realize Capcom is serious about this. Everyone I know in Japan who is playing the game say it's actually pretty cool. So, and you know, it looked good to me. I really liked the game designs before the game came out. You know, the way they were talking about it sounded good. So, I'm happy to see Capcom support it and stick by it, and I hope it catches on.
Excellent. So, Pokemon Bank had, as you might know, a bit of a rocky Japanese debut. There were some issues, and I mean, worldwide, there were issues with the Nintendo Network servers and pretty much every, you know, online network for the various systems, but, you know, this particularly affected Pokemon Bank, so the Western release has, of course, been delayed. We don't know a time window yet, but, you know, as disappointing as it is, I'd rather have it working than potentially, like, you know, lose Poke data or something. And hopefully there'll still be that rare Celebi or maybe even, like, an extra bonus as well to make up for the delay. So, unfortunate, but, you know, it'll be worth the wait, because if they can get an infrastructure in place that's going to be stable, then that's ideal. Monster Hunter Frontier GG, or I'm sorry, it's actually pronounced Monster Hunter Frontier Double G.
The extra G stands for genuine.
It's actually true. It's the a major update, of course, for Monster Hunter G, which is the online Monster Hunter game, which is, you know,
Well, we've talked about the questionable quality of this release here on the show.
I was trying to be diplomatic.
Well, the thing is, I think the reason they're adding this G and doing this whole update to make it genuine, I think is so that it's regarded a little less as a flop, to make it more in line with a real Monster Hunter game.
So kind of a Realm Reborn sort of refresh?
I think so. You know, they also confirmed that toward the end of 2014, there's going to be a big update to Monster Hunter Frontier Double G that will involve a giant tower and actually have a story mode, which for Monster Hunter is actually a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Rainbow Road is going to be a playable stage in the new Smash Brothers.
Oh, in Smash Brothers?
Yes. We've seen a screenshot of it on 3DS, but, you know, it's possibly going to also be on, I was going to say probably and possibly, rural. I mean, it'll perhaps have a Wii U version.
Oh, I see, yeah. So the version that's in the background of this stage that we can see is very clearly Rainbow Road from Mario Kart 7.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe the Wii U version, since the Wii U version is going to have stages based on console games,
what
maybe
on Kart 8?
Yeah, well, if Kart 8 is out yet. If Kart 8 isn't out yet when Smash comes out, which, you know, it should be, but we still don't strictly know, you know, maybe it'll be like a Mario Kart Wii Rainbow Road or something.
Perhaps. Kingdom Hearts HD 2.5 Remix is going to have new scenes for Recoded.
Excellent.
One of the scenes that's to be added is going to be a battle scene, and then also a scene tying together Recoded and Dream Drop Distance.
That's really exciting, because Recoded already ties into Dream Drop Distance.
Yes.
The ending sequence is very specifically, like, that's what makes Dream Drop Distance happen. So I'll be interested in seeing what they add to that. And, you know, something else that's really surprising to me is one of the major parts, like, parts of the feedback with regard to HD Remix 1.5 was that the 358 Days Over 2 movie, it didn't have any action sequences, so, like, none of the boss fights that have story elements happening in them really communicated super clearly in that HD theater movie that they did. Mm. So it seems to me that, like, if they're animating a battle sequence to include, like, it seems to me, you know, that they've taken this criticism to heart and are making a more compelling experience that makes more narrative sense. I mean, you know, for Kingdom Hearts.
Mm. In other Kingdom Hearts news, Kingdom Hearts 3 and 2.5 HD Remix are being developed at the same time, simultaneously, so...
Which, I mean, you know, sort of surprises nobody, but...
It's good to know that they're not like, oh, well, development is halted until we put out 2.5 Remix.
And this is being done by Osaka Team, as we have been discussing on the show for years now. We kind of knew that Osaka Team was going to end up being the ones to do this game.
Hmm. Yoshi's New Island will be out on March 14th in North America. So this is, of course, the 3DS follow-up to Yoshi's Island, and, you know, once again involves Baby Mario. And it really looks like it's shaping up nicely. So that's just going to be here in a couple months.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I didn't think that game looked super good initially, but... It definitely looks like Nintendo has turned it around.
Yeah, so hopefully that'll deliver. And speaking of delivering, Double Fine is delivering Broken Age Part 1 to its Kickstarter backers next week. This is, of course, the game formerly known as Double Fine Adventure, which we discussed last year would have to be split into two parts due to the necessity of more finances to finish the development of the game.
Yeah. I have a lot of feelings about that, especially now looking at it. But in any event, Part 1 is also going to be made available via Steam Early Access on January 14th. So if you didn't back it but you still want to get in on it, you can do so that same day.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure it's going to be fantastic, but, you know, just unfortunately the whole release of it's kind of a bit marred by controversy.
Well, something that really bothers me, and I'm you know, I don't mean to complain or whatever, but, like, you look at some of the voice actors that they have coming on board for this game, it's like Jennifer Hale, okay, she probably didn't cost that much money, but, like, Jack Black, Will Wheaton, Elijah Wood, like, some of these people are, like, major actors that cost a lot of money to bring onto your project.
Like, did you really need
them? Elijah Wood, like, did you need Elijah Wood in your video game? Because... that probably cost a pretty hefty portion of your Kickstarter donations right there.
Yeah.
Like, why are you're trying to make this like a AAA game? What is going on?
Especially when there's a bevy of talented voice actors out there.
Yeah, again, people like Jennifer Hale, who actually do voice acting work in games. Like, that's who you pick.
Like, Ellen McClain.
Yeah.
John Patrick Lowry.
Not the guy from the fucking Hobbit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, those were the Lord of the Rings movies. I know someone's going to send me a nasty email.
Well, he'll probably appear in Hobbit Part 3.
Oh, God, yeah, because The Hobbit is now three-hour-long movies.
Anyway, back on the Smash Brothers tip.
I'm aggressively unpleasant today.
Back on the Smash Brothers tip, King Dedede will be a playable character. So that's a fun. Of course, he'll have his giant hammer. There's a screenshot of Zelda and Peach being like, hey.
Hey.
Like the big boys.
Ooh, girl.
Drakengard 3's latest DLC will have rearranged songs from the game Nier.
This is awesome because Nier had such an effing incredible soundtrack. And this is also really timely because VG Realmiss... the, you know, podcast Video Game Realness, did an episode this week on video game music, and they had tweeted to people about, like, oh, what's your favorite game music? And I had tweeted at them, like, yo, Nier, dog, because Nier is so good, like, the music in that game. So it's funny that this music came up as Drakengard 3 DLC, like, just, again, a day or two later.
There's also, on the PSN store, get a baby head accessory for the character Mikhail.
So. Dude, do you see that picture of that giant baby head?
Yeah, that's kind of awesome. Kind of creepy and very spoopy.
Very spoopy.
But it looks a little like Bayonetta-esque, too, in the same way.
The last of the Guild 01 games looks to be being localized for English-speaking audiences. You may recall that we got most of the Guild 01 games direct on the eShop, you know, like, sometime in the last year, right?
Yeah.
But we did not get the game Shop de Omase.
Weapon Shop de Omase.
Weapon Shop de Omase.
Yeah, I mean, we've even gotten some of the Guild 02 games at this point.
Yes, we have. And this is one of those games, not entirely unlike Torenko's Great Adventure back in the day, where you're not playing the role of, like, an RPG hero, you're playing the role of a shop owner who is selling items to an RPG hero.
That's so cute.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite mechanics in games, like that, like the PC game Racketeer, which if you've never played, I'd highly recommend, was similar to that. So I love this concept. I'm always a big fan of games that take this angle. It's always a lot of fun to me. So I'm really excited. I really hope that that this turns out true and that we get this game.
Definitely. Senran Kagura 2 Deep Crimson has been announced for 3DS. This is a sequel to Senran Kagura Burst. It's a side-scrolling 3D action game from Tamsoft.
And we've talked about this game here on Game Buoy before. So, you know, one of the big parts of this announcement that was announced is that not only will there be busty girls this time, but there will be buff boys to play as.
Ooh, hello. So, I mean, I guess it makes it a little more okay because they're objectifying men as well.
You know, objectification isn't really good ever, but if you're gonna do that as your, like, aesthetic, at least really commit and objectify both. I don't know. I don't know if that's really correct or social justice or whatever, but for me, it's harder to take anyone to task if they're at least objectifying men and women and catering to both audiences.
Well, true. This is slated for a Japanese release on August 7th of this year.
Excellent. And the last one took a while to get over to the U.S., so we might not have this calendar year, but I bet we'll get it.
Yeah. Ooh, we'll get those buff boys. On a related note, Senran Kagura Cooking Rhythm Game has been announced.
Oh.
It's called Dekamori Senran Kagura. It's going to be a Vita game, which is being described as a hyper, big-breasted cooking rhythm game. There's also another game coming out called Senran Kagura EV.
EV? Like the Pokemon?
EV. E, letter E, letter V. So, Dekamori Senran Kagura is going to be served
like
up
Pokemon effort values?
The cooking game is going to be out on March 20th for the Vita. And, yeah. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up with one more Smash Brothers update. There's going to be different trophies for the two different versions.
Yeah, so, you know, this is another thing that's going to be different between the 3DS and the Wii U versions of Super Smash Brothers. We know that they're going to have, you know, basically the same roster of playable characters, but the stages between the two are going to differ, you know, with the Wii U version having more console-based stages and the 3DS version having more portable platform-based stages. This is going to extend also to the collectible trophies in the games. The 3DS version is going to have more, like, trophies based on games from handheld games, and the Wii U version is going to have more trophies based on console games.
Makes sense. I mean, to be fair, I don't really play Smash Brothers for the trophies, but, you know, that's cute. I know a lot of people get into, like, that collectible aspect of it and really, you know, completing every aspect of these games, so.
You know, it's funny because I don't personally really get into collecting them, and yet for whatever reason, I still, when playing these games, get excited when I get a trophy.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, with that, I think we've talked about all of our follow-ups this week, and it's time for...
News. Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, news. So, Tecmo Koei Europe has announced via Twitter that Dynasty Warriors 8 Extreme Legends will be waging war on European PS3s in spring 2014, and that PS4 and Vita owners will be getting Dynasty Warriors 8 Extreme Legends Complete Edition.
Cool.
Which is a bundle of the core game of Dynasty Warriors 8, as well as the Extreme Legends add-on material.
That's pretty cool. You know, I'm not personally a huge fan of these games. I don't mean like that I'm not a fan, but I haven't played these games super much, but that's cool.
Well, you know, something that I've talked about here on GameBuoy over the last year or two is that I've started to get into Musou games.
Right.
And, you know, I certainly would like to have a Musou game on my PS4. I feel like that would be a cool technical showcase to see, you know, just how many characters can get on the screen before it starts slowing down.
Right.
So I'm excited. I'll probably buy that. You know, we have no news about a U.S. release yet. This is still for Europe, but I'm sure if it's coming to Europe, I'm sure we'll get it in the U.S. as well. So this is very exciting.
Nintendo is now selling a high-capacity Wii U gamepad battery. It's $32, but it will offer up to 8 hours of use. So, you know, if that's something that's super important for you to have, I usually just, if I'm playing my Wii U gamepad not super close to, you know, I usually keep my Wii U gamepad plugged in at an outlet near where I'm sitting, so I usually just keep it plugged in, and it doesn't really affect me, but
now see, good. Since I keep my Wii U gamepad on a charging cradle, I don't actually, like, move the plug ever. So this is actually going to be very useful for me. I'll probably buy this. I did actually have an issue with Mario 3D World where, like, every four hours I'd have to stop playing QQQ so that my gamepad could charge. So, you know, this is cool, this add-on, getting double the life, that would be nice. And I could really see myself buying this.
All right.
We talked earlier this year a little bit, I think maybe, about Silicon Era having covered the trademark for something called Lara Croft Reflections. Square Enix, a few weeks ago, has finally revealed the game to be a card-collecting game for iOS devices.
That's what they do.
Work that social money, honey.
I can never pronounce this game. Atelier?
Atelier?
Atelier.
Yeah, that's not a Japanese word.
No, I know. I was trying to say it French, but I failed that too. Atelier Aisha Plus is coming to Vita. This is, of course, going to include the DLC from the PS3 version of Atelier Aisha. And we'll have a hard mode and some balance tweaks.
Exciting!
I know a lot of people who are really into that game, the PS3 version of it. So, yeah. You know, the Atelier games have a smallish but dedicated audience, so...
VidZone has launched on the PS4. This is a free music video streaming app that improves upon its PS3 predecessor with faster startup times and quicker navigation options. You can also take screenshots of your favorite videos to post on Facebook and Twitter.
Interesting. So I can see all your screen caps from Katy Perry's Roar video.
Hopefully we're talking about the one with all the emoji and not the boring one.
Sony is going to be dropping online play for Gran Turismo 5 and the Resistance Trilogy this year. Gran Turismo 5 will stop having online features on May 20th, and Resistance games are going to stop having it on March 28th. A lot of people think this is because with Gran Turismo in particular, GT 6 is now available, so, you know, they really want to encourage sales of that, but I was reading a lot of reactions to this on the interwebs, and people are pissed. But, I mean, I think the thing is, when you buy a game, when you consider, you know, a lot of these companies are running their own servers, you know, you have to understand that that's not necessarily going to be kept up forever, so.
You know, on one hand, I agree, and on the other, like, I saw a lot of places selling Gran Turismo 5 this past holiday season on sale for pretty cheap, like $10. Like, so a lot of people probably have this game and just got it. Like, that's how much true. Does that suck?
That's true. And I mean, a couple people said that, you know, that they got it as a Christmas gift and that, you know, now they won't really be able to do online.
And it's like, I get what you're saying, but I think that is a knife that cuts both ways. Like,
it kind of makes you wonder,
For way older games, I'm not that upset. Like, yeah, I get it. Servers have to come down. You can't just keep them up indefinitely.
Yeah, but GT5 hasn't been out for that long.
No, just a couple years. That's just like, you know, the first Resistance game is pretty old now. But the third one is not that old. Like, and they're cutting online support. There are trophies that are going to be unable to be gotten in these games once these servers go down.
Yeah.
I don't care about such a thing, but I know a lot of people do.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes you wonder, something like Titanfall, like, inevitably that's gonna be, servers will be taken down for that, and what happens then? A lot of people were saying, because there was, I can't remember what game they were referencing, but there was some game that, the developers released a patch or like a little app or something that basically let you use your PS3 as a server, so that you could, still do online play.
That's really cool. And that's sort of more like a PC. You see that a lot more with PC titles.
Right, right. So people were like, why can't console developers start doing this sort of thing? Or, you know, planning for it, at least.
Yeah. I actually agree with that. I think that is a really good point.
Especially with, like, PS4 and Xbox being beefy pieces of hardware that, you know, could, you know, run something like that. Probably.
Yeah. Well, in any event, it sucks. Next up, we have news that arcade-style shoot-em-ups, Raiden 4 and Caladrius, are coming to the PS3 in Japan.
Oh, very cool.
Raiden 4 did see a limited edition North American retail launch back in 2009. We have to date, as far as I know, never gotten Caladrius in the U.S., you know, at all, since it came out in April of last year in Japan in the arcades.
Hmm.
We don't have news yet on an overseas release for these games, you know, here in North America, but I have to assume that such a thing will come. We get a shocking amount of these kinds of games brought over PSN. Like, we're really very lucky in that regard.
Yeah. Chaos Heroes Online, which is a MOBA, for those who aren't familiar with Chaos Heroes Online, is bringing Soul Bad Guy from Guilty Gear as a playable character. But he's a Soul Good Guy, apparently.
Oh my god, I need this game. You know, we've talked a little bit about Chaos Heroes Online on the show, because it has a bunch of guest characters. Like, it had Ulala as a guest character. It had characters from Valkyria Chronicles. Like, this MOBA, it started off as a Korean game, as I recall, and I guess Sega was involved in bringing the game to Japan, where I understand it to be doing, you know, fairly well. Please bring it to America so I can play as Soul Bad Guy. Like, if he's DLC and I have to pay for him, I will. Like, I would pay for him.
Yeah, Soul Bad Guy is super sexy.
Yeah.
It's come to light that Rihanna Pratchett, who was the co-story designer for Mirror's Edge, will not be working on the reboot re-release. So, that's unfortunate. But, you know, I'm sure it will still be a good game, and, you know, I hope that Ms. Pratchett has projects that she'll be involved with that will be excellent. Majesco's indie label,
Midnight City,
is going to be bringing Double Dragon Neon to Steam.
Yes!
And, Slender the Arrival will be, from Blue Isle Studios, will be
coming out to the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 as digital releases, of course.
Yeah, so two different games, but
Yeah, but they're both being done by Midnight City, bringing them to, you know, platforms they weren't available on previously.
Yeah.
And to this, I can only say yay. That is a great thing to hear. Double Dragon Neon, in particular, is a surprisingly awesome game that comes from way forward, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy that, you know, some more people are going to get to play it now. One of the big kerfuffles in the gaming world this week was a massive amount of gamer outcry when Vince Zampella confirmed that Titanfall online battles are going to be limited to 6 versus 6 multiplayer.
What? No 64-player battles?
And Titanfall devs have sort of spoken about this since, because, again, there was huge outcry and backlash about this announcement, basically saying, you know, this isn't a technical issue. It's not like the consoles can't handle more than 12 players at a time. It's that they're designing around 12 players simultaneous, you know, 6v6, because of, for the sake of balance, and, you know, you're going to have giant robots and people climbing walls and shit. And, you know, they want it to be a real, actual, fun, tactical experience and not just hordes of people coming in and shooting wildly and getting kills and headshots wherever possible.
Yeah.
So it's... I appreciate that a lot of people have a more-is-more mentality, but I think that, you know, having a well-designed game trumps having big numbers.
Pretty much.
We also have an interesting news bit here on Fallout 3 for PC. A recently released patch for the Steam version of Fallout 3 appears to be in the process of removing the Games for Windows Live support and DRM.
Oh.
So, you know, this is good. We're hearing more and more about games getting the Games for Windows Live DRM removed. We're hearing more and more leaks about previously Games for Windows Live exclusive games coming to Steam now.
That's good.
So this, to me, just is sort of another drop in the bucket to argue that Games for Windows Live is no more, and we're going to start seeing some of this great content coming to Steam, where, you know, more people are going to be able to experience it. And I don't know about you, but I hate using Games for Windows Live.
Yeah, I remember GTA 4 installed it. And it was just really cumbersome and really, like, got in the way.
Yeah, I mean, I put up with it for things like Dark Souls on PC, but I'd be a lot happier if I didn't have
to. Yeah. Sony has announced PlayStation Now, which is the streaming service bringing older games to PS4, PS3 Vita, and some other devices.
Well, and that's the crazy news here. You know, we knew that a service like this was coming for PS4. I did not know that this was going to be available for PS3, Vita, and, like, TVs and tablets and shit.
Yeah. So, you can rent games, or you can get a PlayStation Now subscription. I wonder if they'll bundle a Now and a Plus subscription together or something.
Yeah, I foresee that Now will not be a part of Plus, but that if you have Plus, there will be a discount to buy a subscription to Now.
Yeah. And of course, this is the, building upon the Gaikai Streaming Foundation.
Yeah, that Sony acquired in 2012. And again, you know, we all sort of knew this was coming. It's just, to see the announcement made and to see that Sony is sort of, using PlayStation Now to support the entire breadth of their devices is really surprising and interesting to me.
A DC Comics level pack is coming to Little Big Planet, which I didn't realize was still getting DLC.
Well, it's not just a level pack, it also has costumes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's time now to do a Marvel versus DC Little Big Planet map. I want to see Superman fighting Captain Marvel.
All right.
So the 3DS firmware has been cracked to allow region-free gaming. But before you get terribly excited, unfortunately, this hack only works on firmware revisions 4.1 to 4.5. These firmware numbers are more than 9 months out of date at this point, so probably no one listening to this is going to be able to do this exploit.
Yeah.
But I'm still very excited because, to me, this is sort of the first step in the path to getting the region free cracked. And obviously very exciting to me is that this hack, this exploit, does not allow pirated games to be played.
Oh, that's great, then.
So, you know, again, if I could hack my 3DS to play Japanese games without and not open up any piracy windows, I'm in a heartbeat. I would start importing so many effing 3DS games. So this is great, and I'm very excited. I really do hope that they find a way to carry this exploit into more recent firmwares now that they have it in place.
Yeah. It looks like Energy Hook, which was the Kickstarter success, is going to be heading to PS4 and Vita along with PC, Mac, and Linux, which, you know, originally there was some confusion as to which would be launching first, but it'll be simultaneous.
Yeah, the exciting thing to me about this is that, you know, this was Jamie Fearstrom's game. That he was the guy who designed the web-slinging mechanic in the Spider-Man 2 movie adaptation game that is generally extremely well-regarded. It's all very physics-based and, you know, like swinging from the actual buildings in your level rather than just invisible lines into the sky.
Yeah.
So he designed a whole game based on that, and we've talked about this here on the show, I think, so I don't want to belabor the point too much, but it looks like, you know, it's going to be coming on consoles first to PS4 and Vita, and, you know, simultaneous to PC, Mac, and Linux. So I'm very excited. I can't wait for this game. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm happy to see it's going to be coming to consoles now.
Yeah. We've had an announcement that Disney Magical World is coming to 3DS on March 11th. A lot of people think that this might be a English localization of Disney Magic Castle My Magical Life, which was a game that came out last July in Japan, developed by Namco Bandai. So that game allowed you to interact with your Miis, with Disney characters. The description of Disney Magical World says that players can customize their characters with hundreds of Disney-themed outfits and accessories, all while managing a cafe, planting crops, and collecting Disney character cards. So, I unfortunately don't know a lot about Disney Magical World to know if that is indeed the case, but hopefully it'll be better than Disneyland Connected Adventures.
And one thing I have to say here, and this is not on you, Joystick cites this game is coming out on March 11th. It's actually coming out on April 11th.
Oh, really?
The press release in their article even has the correct release information, so I'm not sure why their article otherwise says March 11th. But again, this isn't on you. That's not, you know, that's... they're bad, not ours. Moving forward.
Evolve was a game that was originally going to be done by THQ. Total Rock Studios of Left 4 Dead fame picked it up, and it's going to be coming out this fall for PC, the Bone, and the PS4.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. This game is a 4-versus-1 multiplayer game. So it's going to be like an asymmetrically designed game where, basically Left 4 Dead style, you're going to have 4 human players who are teamed up to fight monsters. But the 5th player online is going to be in control of the monsters.
That's awesome.
This is a mechanic similar to what we saw in Zombie U.
Luigi's Ghost Mansion.
Well, yeah, I mean, asymmetric design has existed for forever. But we saw a very similar mechanic to this in Zombie U, and that mode was very fun. I was a big fan of that mode in Zombie U, so I'm very excited to see it play out here. I think with, you know, the 4 human characters against 1 giant monster, like, that's going to be awesome. And apparently the human roles are going to have classes. It's not going to be like Left 4 Dead, where everyone has the exact same skills. Like, there will be a skill system in place.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very excited for this game. I actually think that sounds like a lot of fun. Also announced this past week, in addition to Evolve, is Alien Isolation. This is, of course, a survival horror game being made by Creative Assembly. And, you know, there's not a lot more to say about it, really, other than It's a alien survival horror game where you're being hunted by one of the largest aliens, in terms of size, to exist in the franchise so far. I guess their goal is really more in the vein of Alien than Aliens. And since I think Alien is a lot scarier than Aliens, I'm totally here for it. We also have news that a upcoming Nintendo 3DS app that will be releasing in Japan called Comic Studio. This is, of course, a app, as you could probably tell by its name, that allows users to create their own manga slash comics, is going to be released here in the West. Clavier, the Japanese developer behind the app, has confirmed to Silicon Era that a Western release is planned, though no specific date has yet been set. Japan will see release of this app on January 15th for 800 yen.
Yeah, and I mean, the screenshots that have been released for this game so far look pretty impressive.
It's not a game, it's just an app.
An app, sorry.
And yeah, it's going to be as impressive as anything you can draw. Like, it gives you, like, a little tool. I've been looking over this game since it was announced last week. Or this app, since it was announced last week. You get to, like, set your panel arrangements and then draw within them and then fit them to the size of your panel as you want to scale. I think it just looks like a really surprisingly powerful tool on the 3DS. I'm really excited. You can, once you've finalized your pages, export them in several different image file formats to your SD card, or even send them via the app to your email address.
Oh.
So yeah, it's actually, I think, a really kind of big deal. I think this is going to be a really powerful tool, and I really expect on, like, Tumblr and stuff that as soon as this comes out, we're going to start seeing comics made with it popping up all over the place.
Yeah, definitely.
And last for us, for the day in terms of news, but certainly never least, another Sega Game Gear game is heading to the Nintendo 3DS Virtual Console in Japan. This is This is Shining Force Gaiden, The Final Conflict.
I see why you made that mistake.
This is actually a game in the Shining Force series that takes place between Shining Force and Shining Force 2. Unfortunately, it never received a U.S. release. So while it is only going to be a 500 yen download, I kind of don't think we're ever going to see this make its way to the U.S. because this game, there's no translation in existence.
Yeah.
I'm very sad about that because I effing love the Shining Force games.
It's unfortunate. And also unfortunate is that we have some
doom and gloom.
What was that? Is that like a dying raven?
That was like sad sounds. I don't know.
So first up on our doom and gloom is that Cyberfront, who is the publisher of the Japanese publisher of various games such as The Walking Dead, Portal, Witcher, and also published Skullgirls, is closing shop. There was a change in management in March of last year, and they decided at the end of December to close shop. So that's unfortunate, but, you know, as we always say, hopefully these people will land on their feet. It's time to say goodbye to Hello Games.
Aww, that's sad.
Yeah. Hello Games has been working on, No Man's Sky, and,
Oh, you know, they're actually, no, they're still around. They had a flood in their office.
Oh.
So their studio just took a lot of damage, but they're okay. They're still in business. It's just, like, literally, like, PCs and monitors and, like, filing and stuff all got damaged in a flood.
Oh.
Hey, but that's a lot better than saying goodbye to them forever.
It would help if I had read the entire headline, which says goodbye to PCs, monitors, and more after office flood.
So they're gonna be okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Just need to dry out a little bit.
They should just put those PCs into a box of rice. I hear that works wonders for wet electronics.
So Nintendo had some drama in 2010 with Interaction Laboratories, which also known as IA Labs. They had some Wii Fit patent drama, and Nintendo has won the lawsuit and got the patent portfolio for IA Labs.
That's interesting. You know, this is almost like a patent troll case. And, you know, they had made some claims against Nintendo, and I feel like we may have talked about some of this back in 2012, when the trial judge initially ruled in favor of Nintendo. But the new wrinkle here is that Nintendo basically has acquired their entire patent portfolio now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's doom and gloom for IA Labs, but yay for Nintendo.
Indeed.
All right, well, with all of that having been said, I think it's time.
That was supposed to be a noisemaker, but it sounded hideous. That sounded a little more like one, but it sounded kind of like a sassy chocobo. Of course, we're making noisemaker noises because it's time to talk about 2013, the gaming year in review.
Ew, ew, ew.
Ew. So, 2013 was a very interesting year for gaming. A lot of big things happened, of course. A lot of controversies, a lot of drama, a lot of good times, a lot of bad times.
A lot of sickness, a lot of health. I want to start this conversation off. I want to talk a little bit about some of the big news bits of the year. Slykick, why don't you tell me your opinion on the initial reveal of the Xbox One?
Well, I mean, it was a shitstorm, and like we kind of talked about when we had our last episode about the X-Bone, you know, we really came around and kind of learned to, you know, not judge a bone by its cover, but, you know, the Xbox 180 was definitely one of the biggest news stories of the year, you know, and I think that the 180 was almost as controversial as the initial announcements. You know, the Kinect requirements and the various... I think one of the things with the 180 that was really upset a lot of Microsoft fans is that the concept that Microsoft had for the digital games library actually, like, sounded pretty forward-thinking, and, you know, now that's not the case. So, I mean, I think the Xbox One ended up being a great piece of hardware. It has some great games for it already. And I think even though it's not selling as well from what I've heard as the PS4, it's doing well. And, you know, people are definitely in the market for it, so...
You know, so, well, let's look at that. Well, let's take a moment and also look at the reveal of the PlayStation 4, because that was all obviously one of the huge defining moments of gaming in 2013.
Yeah, and I mean, it was almost the opposite. People were like, yeah, you know, PlayStation, Sony's really doing it right this time. They've got a good battle plan. There's some great games coming to it. And, I mean, everyone, we all jumped on board, even though I was unable at the time to go forward with my pre-order, but, you know, so it was really the opposite of what we saw with the Xbox One. And of course, I mean, the Xbox One being revealed later also meant it had the unfortunate disadvantage of being compared to the PS4. But I mean, you know, PS4's launch event was really done right. You know, they had focused on a lot of indies and stuff, and then you remember the Xbox reveal event had the controversy of Killer Instinct, just lie down and take it, or whatever that
tasteless comment was. That does bring me to my next point, but we'll come back in a moment. Right. Let me finish up finish your thought.
So, I mean, I think kind of the way that the whole PS4 and Xbox One thing played out is that, you know, definitely, and I mean, I guess the sales numbers are showing, yes, PS4 is the more successful one, it's hard to find, because, you know, there is a big demand for it. But, you know, in a lot of ways, like we said, that the Xbox One really has a lot of more, at least for the Game Boy taste, that's available now. And, you know, really is ready for prime time. I mean, not that Sony wasn't ready for prime time, but I think it's kind of interesting that PS3 really had the same issue with, you know, a lack of big titles that really, you know, draw people in.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think that you did touch on sort of, to me, one of the major news themes or just general trends in the games industry in 2013 was that we saw companies being a lot more reactive this year to sort of fan bases, audiences that were speaking out. We started to hear more about, you know, larger studios and publishers really taking a heed feedback on, like, you know, Microsoft. They did the Xbox 180.
Mm-hmm.
They heard that people were not going to buy this box with all of these issues. And so they backpedaled. And, you know, it's interesting because from that regard, it then becomes interesting to look at things like Blizzard announced that they're going to be removing the real money auction house from Diablo 3.
Right.
And it just highlights even more instances where publishers didn't listen. Things like SimCity 4, or not SimCity 4, but the new SimCity still being an online-only game after the clusterfuck
right.
that was that launch. Despite the fact that people have, on their own, made mods to the game to allow it to run offline fairly easily. Apparently just changing, like, an online connection check, basically. And spoofing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no real need for data going to the cloud or whatever.
Yeah, indeed.
So that's really interesting. But, you know, the trend that I really wanted to touch on, relating to what you were saying about the Mass Effect, just take it controversy.
Killer Instinct.
I said just take it because she had... What did
you
I...
said Mass Effect.
Oh, goodness gracious.
But,
me.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about Mass... I don't know if you were thinking about Mass Effect for this reason, but BioWare, of course, responding in 2012 to controversy and doing the director's cut.
Yeah, well, no, absolutely. I was sort of thinking about that in the back of my head and the EA connection with SimCity and everything.
Right, right.
So that is where my head was and why I said that. But, yes, the Killer Instinct controversy with just take it or just let it happen or whatever... is that we did start to finally see sort of the sleeping giant wake up, and we started to see gamers as a community, and again, I said started to see, we're not there yet, but we're starting to see gamers as a community step up and wake up and rise up with it, regard to issues of feminism and feminists and women in games.
Right.
This, of course, is probably most exemplified in Anita Sarkeesian's video documentary series.
Tropes versus Women in Video Games.
Exactly so. And, you know, we're not there yet. There are still a lot of people attacking her constantly. In fact, I know that we have a few listeners who disagree with her and the things she says. And I have to say, I respect that. I respect that people have different opinions. People don't think necessarily that her method of... just stating facts without coming to any kind of conclusion. I appreciate that this really bothers some people. They feel like she just takes clips of women and doesn't say anything about them. I don't personally believe that that's true, but to me the most important thing happening here is that this is a dialogue that's finally happening.
Right.
People who previously wouldn't have thought about the presence of women in games, who previously wouldn't have thought about, you know, critically about what roles women were taking in games. These are things that people now are starting to notice.
Mm-hmm.
When you play Tomb Raider and they, as a plot point, use, like, the attempted rape of Lara, this is something now that even straight white gamer, male gamer bros see as, like, oh, this is unsettling. Whereas, you know, maybe before this was a plot point that a lot of people wouldn't have really seen the punch or shock behind if you were coming from that sort of socio-political place or, you know, or gender
right.
place.
And I mean, I'm sure that because we've, you know, been talking behind the scenes that we definitely would like to devote a full episode to this theme. But I mean, I just very briefly, I feel that it's also on a larger political landscape, you know, with the legitimate rape thing that was, you know, within the past couple of years, that sort of controversy and, you know, really kind of...
binders of women.
But, yeah, binders of women. I'm laughing at the ridiculous of it, not the...
Yeah, Yeah. No, I appreciate that.
But, you know, just really that we have seen a lot of resurgence of, you know, feminist issues and issues concerning women in our culture. So, I mean, that has extended, I think, in a lot of ways to the gaming landscape.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And again, to me, one of the larger trends isn't necessarily that people agree that women are being marginalized. Don't get me wrong. I personally don't think that's in dispute. I don't see how you could argue otherwise with a straight face. But to me, one of the most important things is that this year people really started talking about it. Women started speaking out, and people started listening. And I think that a lot of people, a lot of very powerful and influential people in the games industry are really taking note and commenting on these things and trying to make positive change.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot understate the importance and value of this long term. I'm very pleased to see that again these things are being talked about, which to me is the real value of the tropes versus women in video games. Even if I don't agree with everything Anita Sarkeesian says, although, you know, personally I do agree with most of what she says, the real value again is that we're starting a dialogue and people are starting to think critically.
Yeah. I have a place I'd like to take this that's related, but I want to take a minor step back talking about the PS4 launch event, the Xbone launch event, and really what I think was the biggest related to those two is that Nintendo opted to not have an E3 keynote, instead choosing to do Nintendo Direct.
Nintendo Direct, yeah.
And I think this really was the year that Nintendo Direct came into its own, and that Sony and Microsoft started to see that this is a method of delivering information and news and, you know, directly to the consumer that's really been successful for Nintendo. And, you know, they've kind of latched onto that.
Yeah, we have seen, we have seen Sony specifically do this themselves now and do, streaming events that are not like full-on press events like they used to do and are just like, oh, we're streaming this Vita Heaven event. If you have a Vita, be sure to tune in.
Yeah.
So, and you know, we've talked about the Vita Heaven events. They've done two, I think, now.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about them here on the show. And to me, you're absolutely right. I hadn't even thought about that. I did briefly think that we should talk about Nintendo's place this year, as 2012 was supposed to be a big year for the Wii U, but one of the running themes of this year, and you know,
2013,
we're not,
you mean.
Well, of 2013. I meant this year as in the year that we're discussing. You know, is that the Wii U is struggling.
Yeah.
And I love my Wii U. I certainly couldn't say that I'm disappointed by it because I love it. I own hell of games for it. I like every game for it that I have. I play stuff like NES Remix and I'm like, wow, this is really fresh in a really strange way. So, you know, it's difficult for me to comment on the Wii U's precarious situation in terms of sales or lack thereof. But at the same time, sort of the elephant in the room that can't be ignored is it is just not selling super well.
Yeah.
And I don't really know. I mean, I guess, you know, we thought that 2014 was going to be the Wii U's year. I'm sorry, 2013. But now it's like, well, 2014 is going to have Mario Kart 8. It's going to have the new Xenoblade game. It's going to have
Zelda Musou.
I guess. It's going to have, you know, Bayonetta 2. It's going to have Smash Brothers. So maybe 2014 will turn things around for the Wii U. And if not, then we're going to probably look back as 2013 as the year that the Wii U started to die.
And, you know, I'm sure that Nintendo's already thinking about what's next and, you know, really considering, you know.
Well, you know, the reality of these situations is they start planning what's next. Every company starts planning what's next before what's out now has even launched.
Right.
Like, Microsoft and Sony are both certainly already thinking about the successors to their consoles that have only been out for a month.
Right.
But you do start to wonder if Nintendo isn't going to change the Wii U's timeline. And you know, maybe what they previously thought was going to be, you know, a 5 or 6 year life cycle. Maybe it's just going to be a 3 or 4. Maybe they'll do what they did for the GBA and, you know, release a supposed third pillar, which they did with the DS. And then once the DS took off, they just let the Game Boy line die. Maybe we'll see them do a third pillar home console where it's like, oh, this is a supplement to your Wii U. It's not a replacement. And then if it takes off, maybe they'll replace the Wii U.
Interesting.
I could see them moving in that direction with some sort of home console portable hybrid or something.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people would be really on board with that. But, you know, again, this is idle speculation. All I can really say, facts for facts, is that 2013 did not treat the Wii U well, and now we have to see where it goes from here. Of course, I, and I know a lot of our listeners, have Wii U's that we love. So, you know, in terms of the games that are already there and those coming out, I don't feel, like, super concerned. We're going to get those games. But just can't help but wonder, looking back at 2013, like, what can Nintendo do to fix what happened in terms of the Wii U sales in 2013?
Right, and I mean, I almost feel like that could be a micro at some point.
I don't want to do a micro that's just us speculating.
A specro.
Anyway, continue. I sort of prompted this. What else did you have to say?
No, just, I had meant for the, you know, Nintendo Direct and, you know, just the other companies kind of hopping on board with that to be just a brief side note, but we kind of got carried away. But really, specifically Nintendo Direct came into its own. You know, I specifically think that Nintendo of America has really become more confident with theirs. And, you know, they really can be, like, really cheesy and dorky sometimes, but in an endearing way. Like, you know, when Bill from the Nintendo Treehouse and a recent one just a couple months back was in, like, the elevator. And, I mean, they're really just kind of, you know, hamming it up instead of just, you know, simply being for information of games, just trying to, you know, kind of make it silly and fun without being super weird like the 2013 CES. The CES keynote from Qualcomm.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you have something else to say? Because otherwise I have another interesting talking point.
Well, the discussion of feminist issues becoming part of the dialogue kind of led me to wanting to talk about Gamer X.
Oh, that would probably be a big talking point for 2013, yeah. Okay, why don't you do that?
I mean, both on a larger scale and also a personal scale, for us being, like, one of the gaming highlights of our year, and really connecting with our podcast besties and all that. But, you know, in the same way, since the launch of Gamer X, and as that, you know, in the months leading up to it, really increased the dialogue of, you know, the lack of LGBT characters in gaming, and, you know, continuing kind of pushback from, like, oh, well, why do gays need their own convention? And, you know, towards the end of the year, we had the controversy of, oh, the diversity plaza or whatever for next year's PAX. And, you know, that kind of becoming controversial. And just the, you know, I really feel that sexuality and gender in gaming are very related in a lot of ways. And, you know, and I think we saw that reflected at Gamer X as well, that not only were queer issues in gaming being brought up, but also issues of gender. Well, I mean, you know, not just female and, you know, issues, but also, you know, transgender as well. So, I mean, gender definitely ties into
all
sexuality.
Across the spectrum, yeah.
And also persons of color and, you know, just, I mean, I really feel something that was really insightful and, you know, really kind of, I think if people, you know, had any doubts about Gamer X, is that really, you know, wasn't just about these, you know, racial, gender, sexuality issues, but I mean also just kind of the idea of exploring, like, you know, narrative in games and, you know, really being, I feel, one of the first conventions to really be focused on, you know, sort of, like, discussing, opening these dialogues as opposed to being, like, something like E3, which is, you know, just a trade show, or, you know, PAX, which is, you know, probably more, I would say more like a Comic-Con, which, you know, definitely, you know, some panels and stuff, but I mean, I really, think that was, there was a lot of, you know, critical analysis going on, a lot of, that sort of thing. And, but I mean, particularly just with the, a lot of, like, EA getting on board and really acknowledging that they want to step it up and introduce more, you know, just opening up that dialogue, so.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree that this year was instrumental in furthering that discussion as well. Like, I mean, I don't know what more to say to it than, I mean, you think you summed it up really well. That, you know, we have a dialogue, we are starting to establish safe places, and we really saw that, I mean, I don't want to call it an agenda, because then it looks like I'm pandering and playing into the whole Republican idea of, like, oh, the homosexual agenda. But
yeah.
But I do feel like the equality agenda was furthered a lot this year on many fronts in the gaming realm.
Indeed.
You know, often kicking and screaming as these dude bros don't want to let go of their bag of Doritos or Cheetos long enough to let equality come in.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm a hater, bitch. I can't help it. But...
Well, that's also an interesting thought, but...
What's that?
No, just the a dude bro hater, but...
Oh, right. Something else I really wanted to talk about that I think really punctuated the year, as you may recall, at the beginning of the year, THQ had just declared bankruptcy
yep.
a few weeks prior, right at the end of December, and we started off the year with news that their properties were going to be auctioned off, and, you know, many of their properties and studios did find new homes.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't yet heard what the future is going to look like for some of these franchises that have fans,
but, I mean,
Darksiders in particular.
Right. But, I mean, we did see Saints Row 4 come out this year. And so, you know,
Saints Row 4 did make it out. We just saw Evolve announced this past week.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that really did start the year off on a doom and gloom sort of note. And, I mean, certainly it wasn't the first, you know... doom and gloom sort of issue that even that we've covered on Game Boy. I mean, we really followed Sega's near demise before they really, you know, turned it around. But, you know, I think that THQ had a lot of people just kind of feeling nostalgic and, you know, really worried because it really was a big, big company.
They were a company big enough that, you know, to use the term that came up often during the financial crisis here in the U.S., THQ was a company that a lot of people thought of as too big to fail. And so I think when they fell, I think that that really bothered a lot of people, like, a lot.
Yeah.
So, in any event.
U-Draw.
Right?
We saw some U-Draws at Kmart, like, 3 weeks ago, so.
They were, like, $15. I almost wanted to buy one. In any event, those for me are the big newses of 2013.
I agree.
Can you think of any others? Anything you want to talk about?
No, you know, before this episode, I was kind of scrolling through our archives, which you can always find on GameBooey.org.
GameBooey.org.
Just click on the episodes tab. You can go scroll through all of our episodes.
Please scroll through all of our episodes.
But, you know, I really feel that what you had mentioned just, you know, with the... Officially, we are in the new console generation, the dialogue of gender and sexuality equality issues, and like you said, you know, THQ, and I really feel like that kind of is what punctuated this year, as you so aptly said.
Excellent. All right, well, let's get on to the next part of this discussion, then. Let's talk about some of the big games of 2013. And I want to do this a little differently because I want to acknowledge some of the really common games that we're seeing on a lot of top 10 lists this year, or, you know, the year that we're discussing, since I know you're going to be pedantic about it. You know, are not present on our lists. You know, Slidekick and I both have compiled best top 10 of 2013 lists that we're going to discuss here. And I just want to make a quick note about a couple of games that aren't included here. I was not able to complete Tearaway before recording this episode. I'm playing it. This is a Vita game. It's really quite impressive. It's the first Vita game I've ever played that made me like the back touchpad. So if that doesn't tell you that this is a good game, I don't know what can. It's, you know, the newish game by Media Molecule, the Little Big Planet guys. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that it bombed pretty hard. You know, I got my copy for $20 brand new. And it's only been out for a couple months, so...
Yeah, for me, I have two big ones that I didn't get around to that were a lot of people's favorites. One of them being Rayman Origins, Rayman Legends.
Legends, and Legends. Also, way to cut me off, but keep on.
Sorry, Origins was the one before that, so that's why I was getting confused. Rayman Legends was really popular. I know Extra Forever on Horde House on the Voice of Geek Network, that was like one of his top games. I think he double-dipped, or like triple-dipped even.
Yeah, he has that on multiple consoles. I know he, or platforms. I know he definitely has it on PC, and he definitely has it on Wii U. I don't know if he has it
on. He was talking about trophies, so I think he has it on PS3.
That would be an also, because I know he definitely has it on Wii U, and he definitely has it on PC.
I'm sorry, I will kick it back to you.
You know, I also only played, Grand Theft Auto 5 for about an hour. So, you know, I'm fairly certain it wouldn't be on my top 10 list, but I want to know, you know, that it's, you know, not in the running because I didn't complete it. And that goes for The Last of Us as well.
That was going to be mine too.
You know, I know a lot of people are talking about how this is like the best game they've ever played or whatever, and I played it for a couple of hours and it did not click for me at all. So, you know, I know people are going to ask, oh, why isn't this game of the year? And the real answer for me is because I didn't love it the way everyone else seems to.
Mm-hmm. And not necessarily things that would be on Game of the Year list, but like some things that I missed out on that I had wanted to check out were Giannis Sisters Twisted Dreams.
And that's actually great. Although I think it came out on PC last year.
Oh, did it?
Well, 2012.
I know it definitely got a Wii U release this year. And just, you know, some other little things. Like, I actually missed out on Project Crosszone. I just didn't get around to it.
You know, another one I missed out on that I played it, but again, I gave up fairly quickly because I just wasn't feeling it, was Ni No Kuni.
Yeah, you know, same here. And, I mean, it was really pretty, you know, really well designed. I kind of, you know, was really into it for about 10 to 12 hours. So, I mean, I put a decent amount of time into it.
Yeah, I got 3 or 4 hours in, and I just was not feeling it.
You know, another one that I had a lot of fun with, but I unfortunately got set aside, was Anarchy Reigns.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that would be Game of the Year material anyway, but I did, again, it does fit on that list of sort of, like, I played this and I liked it, but I didn't play it as much as I would have liked to have, which for me, in my personal life, was sort of a running theme in gaming this year.
Right.
With that having been said, now that we've talked sort of about what we haven't played, let's talk about what we have. Slagkick, what was your number 10 game this year?
Well, remember when we did the Dice Awards?
I do.
And we announced them like we were at an awards show?
I do.
I want to do it like that.
Okay. Let's see...
The best game about breaking combos.
And the award goes to?
Killer Instinct. Was that supposed to be like an 8-bit applause sort of sound?
That was exactly. Why don't you tell me a little bit about why you love Killer Instinct?
Well, I guess it's time to drop the bomb here. I picked up my Xbox One. Shifted money around a little bit, realized that, you know, that gaming, and I guess I can talk about that in like a gaming resolution towards the end, but, you know, I really want to make more time for gaming, and that, you know, that it's important to have that as part of my personal life balance. Something that I think Killer Instinct did really well that I haven't seen any other fighting game do for me is the dojo mode. Like, for the first time ever, and I mean, it might just be because, you know, it was available to me, and, you know, I didn't have to go, like, research it or, you know, really, you know, dig into it. So, I mean, maybe I was just a little lazy, but, I mean, it really kind of has made me start to think about, you know, the flow of fighting games, you know, really the idea of, you know, that there really is like a rhythm to how to play a fighting game. And that never really made sense to me until Killer Instinct. And then the other part of it being taking that and going into the main game, it's not like a Tekken where you can just kind of mash buttons and be successful. I mean, it's still, you know, a tightly tuned fighting game. So, you know, I was really, really impressed. And, you know, I'm not a fighting game expert. And it might seem a little surprising that I'm including a game that I'm kind of terrible at, but I think really, for the fact that it's really made me think, like, wow, I actually understand fighting games now, I think that's really significant for me.
Excellent. You know, that's a really great argument, and I'm really happy to hear that, because for me, when I was playing Killer Instinct and watching, or not watching, but doing this dojo mode myself, just because I wanted to unlock bonus costume stuff and stuff. I really was playing it like, man, I could see how this would teach someone to play fighting games. And, you know, I talked about that during our Xbox episode.
Right. I mean, it's not easy mode, but it's not, like, really punishing either. And, it's not overwhelming. And there's still parts of dojo mode that I haven't gone back and finished yet. So I'm still picking away at that. But, you know, I mean, just to make a point of how effective it is, Captain Spike and I were playing Street Fighter 4 in the arcade the other day, and, like, I never was able to, like, roll the joystick or what have you to do a Hadouken. And because of, you know, just practicing it in dojo mode and seeing, you know, just kind of seeing it broken down, like, I was busting out Hadoukens.
And, you know, it's easy for me to take these things for granted. Like, I can input...
You've been doing it for 20 years.
Well, that was sort of my point, is that I've been doing, you know, quarter rolls, you know, quarter forward, half back, or whatever. Like, I've been doing these complex technical inputs for so long that I can, you know, I can dragon punch as easy as I can blink my eyes. I don't even think about the fact that these things are difficult. But to have, like, a tool that teaches people to do these things in, you know, 2014, I think is very useful for opening the door to newcomers to fighting games as a genre.
Right.
One that I think is very important.
Yeah, and I think the last point I want to mention about Killer Instinct is I really think that the multiple price model was a really successful aspect of it as well. And I mean, when we saw the announcement of it, we saw a lot of people... I mean, it seemed to me like copycats of that, but I mean, maybe that had been the plan all along, but I mean, that seems to be like a really popular model that we're seeing and be seeing for fighting games is, you know, purchasing characters and, you know, having different tiers of content. I went for the $20 version.
So all the characters, but not all of the little goodies.
Right.
That makes sense. Well, in the interest of time, since we're still on, you know, of the 20 games we're going to talk about, We're still only on number one. I'm going to say that we let Killer Instinct go and move forward.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to toss it over to you.
This is actually... I cheated a little bit. This is my number 10A and number 10B.
What?
First is the best game about showing you that modern life is rubbish. And the second is the best game about showing you how modern life is unpleasant.
Oh, do you mean my new career?
And the award goes to The Stanley Parable and Gone Home.
Ooh.
Ah. You know, I don't know that I can say a whole lot about these games that hasn't been said, but let me try. You know, both of these games have had their status as games called into question. You know, because they're fairly linear, more like interactive narratives. But to me, the important part of the game designation is the interactive part. And both Stanley Parable and Gone Home are experiences that would be lessened in any form of media. Which is why, for me, I feel completely comfortable talking about them as games. And not only talking about them as games, but talking about them as important pieces of art that were released in 2013. These were both games that had something to say about very specific environments and very specific situations that I think communicated thoughts and feelings, which for me is, you know, a part of being art is just communicating and being, you know, a creative work. And, you know, I think that people who didn't live in the circumstances of Gone Home, which I don't want to say too much about because I'm sure some people haven't played it yet, and I think it would be best to go in blind. But, you know, you play, and even if these circumstances aren't your life, you can start to empathize with the characters in this game more because of how you're in the method that you're interacting with them with. And, you know, the dark rooms and everything. I feel like because this game and this story are presented as a game, I actually think that these things are communicated better. Mm. And, you know, this also goes for Stanley Parable, which does some really interesting things using repetition to communicate certain things maybe about how the world works and people's attitudes about it. That, again, I don't think either of these would have been as effective in any other form of media. And I think that's a really important step in the games as art movement. Although I've always been a firm believer that games are art, I feel like with games like this, it becomes harder to argue against.
Indeed.
Slackick, why don't you give me your number 9?
The number 9 game in the category of best game about being a virtual reality J-pop star, the award goes to Hatsune Miku, Project Diva F. I really was surprised at how much I liked Project Diva F. You know, when you had first picked it up, I was just like, oh, LOL Vocaloids. But I mean, not only did it really, you know, kind of make me understand the appeal of Vocaloids, but I mean, it's a really fun rhythm game. You know, of course, it's very, you know, very strict timing as Japanese rhythm games are, but you know, it's just really, really fun. I had compared it, I believe, to similar to a sort of Elite Beat Agents meets, you know, kind of just like a Jammer Lammy Parappa sort of thing, but you know, just really kind of frantic in some ways. And I mean, really, of course, being a rhythm game, the soundtrack was really what I think kept me wanting to play. So, not too much to say about that. Although the mode where you can like tickle Miku-chan and stuff was a little creepy.
Yeah, but the core gameplay, as you say, it's just really solid, and the music is great.
Yeah. So I don't have much more to say about it.
Excellent. All right, well then, my game of the year, number 9, the award for best game about crushing your enemies' spines for their sweet electrolytes goes to...
It's a little gruesome.
Yeah, it is. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Yay!
You know, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance had a very troubled development cycle. And this game, after being shown off as a technical showpiece for many years at various media events, was in danger of being canceled before, you know, the guys over at Platinum stepped in and made a deal with Konami to basically turn this game about Raiden with his sword that can cut anything into a character action game, the sort of which Platinum is known for. And what Platinum did with Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, to me, is nothing short of incredible. You know, they're known for their intense and highly technical action games with precision, but while still being, you know, sort of open to newcomers and being very friendly and teaching you how to play action games. I would actually say that Metal Gear Rising Revengeance takes it one step further and is more technical than any of their other action games. And I was really blown away by how well the game played and how responsive it was. And, you know, it demands a lot of you as a player, but it teaches you how to play it while you play. It's, again, you know, like Bayonetta before, because I gave Bayonetta a lot of the same praise in its time. It to me is one of two evolutions, two directions that the character action genre could have taken. And I really enjoyed it. I think it's a great game.
Excellent.
Mr. Slagkick?
Yes?
Why don't you tell me what your number 8 is?
Alright. The award for best game about recruiting companions and making them fight enemies on a grid goes to Fire Emblem Awakening. One of the things that I really liked about Fire Emblem Awakening is that, you know, it really, for me being a newcomer to the series, was a really great jumping in point. I, of course, did not play on the, you know, hardcore normal mode or whatever, but,
the hardcore normal mode.
For me personally, it was a much better way of learning, strategy games than Pokemon Conquest was. I thought it was a fuller experience. And, you know, I really enjoyed the, you know, customization. I could, you know, make my main dude really however I wanted him to. I could, you know, kind of choose who I wanted to bring along in a lot of cases. And I just really, you know, it made me really appreciate the appeal of these Fire Emblem games that, you know, for a long time people have been really devoted to it. And, you know, and now I really see why. It's really the first proper Fire Emblem experience I've had, and, you know, makes me eager to check out some of the past ones.
Excellent, excellent. That's very exciting.
Captain Spike, what was your number 8 game of the year?
Captain Spike's number 8 game of the year, the award for the best game about 3D Metroidvania-ing through the most traumatic moments of your young female life, goes to Tomb Raider.
Yeah, Laura's trauma.
You know, I had a lot of reservations about Tomb Raider. We've discussed that here on the show. I still have a few problems, ultimately, with ways I think the game could have been better, primarily more actual raiding of tombs. But I have to give it to the people over at Crystal Dynamics. I really feel like they did the best, if not reboot, I mean, although certainly it is a reboot, but almost like a re-envisioning of what a Tomb Raider game could be. And I think that they did it really well. I really do. I think that the direction of, like, 3D exploration, three-dimensional exploration, platforming, backtracking with new abilities, Metroidvania style, I just felt like they put together a very compelling piece of game software.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the sequel will have more tombs.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think the main reason why people get on this tombs kick is less that I care about the aesthetic of a tomb, and more that there weren't really a lot of, like, puzzles and 3D environment interactions that the series is famous for. The puzzle elements were very limited. Like, there were some cool stuff with, like, oh, open this window so that air can blow this moving platform up so you can make a jump. And, like, that stuff was really cool, but there wasn't a lot of it. So I would like to see more of those kinds of elements. But it's nitpicky, because, again, you know, as I've talked about earlier this year when the game came out and I played it, I really just think it's a tremendous game. I'm really super impressed and happy for everyone involved. I think it's a great game.
Great.
Slagkick, how about you give me your number 7?
All right, the award for best game about sailing the ocean in a talking boat goes to The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD.
Ooh.
Oh!
No, I mean,
Yay! Of course, I love Wind Waker, so, you know, this pretty much was guaranteed a spot on my top 10 list. It doesn't hurt that it turned out super well, looks gorgeous, and the little tweaks that they did to it really, you know, enhanced rather than detracted. So, not much more to say about that. If you want to hear more in depth my thoughts about Wind Waker HD, you should go back into the Koopa Club archives and check out my guest appearance in which I discussed the game. Alright, Captain Spike, what's your number 7 game?
Captain Spike's number 7 game of the year, the best game about using math to assassinate office guards and steal microfilm, and the award goes to...
Wait, is that your day job?
It should be. Gunpoint!
Oh, woo!
So I really like Gunpoint because it's, you know, I've talked about this here on the show. In fact, you know, most of these games we've talked about here on the show, you might want to look through our archive of episodes over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
You know, it's just a really cool game. I like the aesthetic, but what I really like is the entire mechanic of, like, going in and, like, setting up traps to take out guards and giving you bonuses for, like, not just shooting every dude. Because, you know, it's at its core, it's a puzzle game. And it's the kind of puzzles that it are, sort of complex logic problem-solving puzzles. That's my jam. Like, puzzle games for me are so much more than falling blocks and matching colors. And I get more interested at things like, oh, you're in a moving space and you need, you know, this person to be in this position. How can you get them there so that you can do this Y action?
So, like, the supreme evolution of something like Adventures of Lolo, Eggerland.
Yes, honestly, I have to say sort of. So, it's, you know, it's a great game. If you haven't played it, you can get it on Steam for dirt cheap, and I recommend you check it out. Gunpoint.
Excellent.
Sidekick, give me your number 6.
The award for best game about being a mural in dungeons that is a sequel to a 22-year-old classic goes to... The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds. And again, being a Zelda game. That was my, that was supposed to be like, woo, but it was like, Being a Zelda game, you know, also probably guaranteed at a spot, but, you know, it doesn't hurt that it's pretty much, oh, I mean, I wouldn't say pretty much, but, you know, in a lot of ways addresses a lot of the concerns that we've talked about with the Zelda franchise about kind of, you know, getting a bit stale. I mean, I really think that a lot of the mechanics, not just the, you know, becoming a mural, but I mean, being able to do dungeons in any order and really just kind of mixing that up really gave it a fresh perspective. I thought that, you know, the puzzles were solid, you know, they were just on par with the puzzles that you saw in A Link to the Past. And, you know, I thought that, you know, it really had its own visual aesthetic while remaining true to A Link to the Past. You know, at first we...
You know, a lot of people called it ugly. I'm looking in the general direction of Jeremy Parrish, but I actually thought that game had a tremendous, like, look. I thought it looked great.
Yeah, and I mean, another thing that I had really wanted for a long time was, you know, for Nintendo to revisit the classic era. I had thought in the vein of New Super Mario Brothers, so in a lot of ways this kind of does feel like a New Super Mario Brothers for the Zelda franchise, and that's really exciting to me because, you know, it shows that they're willing to do things like this while continuing to do their big 3D Zelda adventures, and I really hope that we see, you know, not necessarily a third game sequel to A Link to the Past, but maybe an 8-bit... Well, I mean, I don't know if they would ever go for an 8-bit version of, like, you know, Zelda 1 and Zelda 2, but just more like that. Like, maybe a Link's Awakening, Another Dream. Sorry if that's spoilers, but that game's 20 years old. But yeah, you know, very, very happy with it. And, you know, it really makes me hopeful for the franchise.
Excellent.
Captain Spike, what's your number 6?
My number 6...
Number of the Beast.
666. The best game about killing things with drawings.
Like, wait, you mean like Scribble Knots?
Girl. I'm talking, of course, about Platinum Games' The Wonderful 101.
Oh!
You know, Wonderful 101, again, if you really want to hear all of my thoughts on this game, you should check out the Koopa Club archives. That's Koopa with the Q, Club with the K. I guessed it over there to talk about this game a couple of months back. You know, I had mentioned while talking about Metal Gear Rising Revengeance that I felt like from Bayonetta there were two ways that Platinum could have taken action character action games. And the first was a more demanding technical style of game like Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. And the other was sort of more in line with some of the zanier aspects of Bayonetta and sort of experimenting with the sort of idea of, like, throwing everything into the game that you possibly can. Weird homage levels to previous games in genres. You know, you had the Bayonetta Space Harrier stages and the Hang-On stages. And in Wonderful 101, you have fucking Punch-Out stages. So, and, you know, you rather than take the game to a more technical place, they took it to a place where you have to perform more actions per minute. So it's less technically demanding and more like it's like playing Bayonetta with five little squads of other Bayonettas that you can send out. But it is very much a technical character action game. You know, I know that when Wonderful 101 was first being hyped, a lot of people likened it to Pikmin. But it's really only like Pikmin in that in the pitch, you're controlling a horde of characters. In actual gameplay, it's a character action game through and through.
Wonderful 101 Bayonetta crossover. Wonderful Bayo1.
The thing is, Bayonetta's in Wonderful 101.
But I just mean controlling...
Spoilers.
Controlling, like, hundreds of little Bayonettas?
No, but she...
I want a game where I'm controlling hundreds of Bayonettas.
You can unlock her to be one of the Wonderful 101.
Well, that's great. But I want to control hundreds of Bayonettas that form out of her hair.
Okay, but I'd play that. So, I can't really fault you. But no, great game. Again, one of, to me, the two real evolutions that Platinum Games could have taken the character action genre that they basically created. And, you know, before they were Platinum, when they were still all at Capcom working on games like Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't possibly speak highly enough about Wonderful 101. I think it's a really incredible game. I think it's really sad that so few people played it. And I know that a lot of people play it and don't get it. It doesn't click for them. And so they give up on it. But if you're hearing me say this right now, if you've played Wonderful 101 and you walked away because it's hard or doesn't make sense or it's confusing, just stick with it and remember, it's more Bayonetta than it is Pikmin, and the sooner you can figure that out, the sooner it's going to click for you.
Excellent.
Slagkick, why don't you give me your number 5?
The award for best game about being a duck that travels around the world hunting treasure goes to DuckTales Remastered. Of course, I've sung the praises of DuckTales Remastered on this show before. One of the things that I think is really successful were, not to, be negative, but a game that, Castle of Illusion HD fell a little short, was that it's a very faithful recreation of the original game. It just has updated visuals. You know, there are a few changes, like the final level, instead of having you go back to Transylvania again, is in a hidden volcano lair. So, I mean, that's a little bit of a change. But there's also, the new introduction level where you're in Scrooge's money vault. But, still, the levels that are from the original game are totally faithful. The controls are super tight, just like they were. A lot of people said that it felt too difficult, and I remember we talked about that. I never thought DuckTales was super, rigidly difficult, A lot of people wanted the, pogo jump to be looser, but I mean, like, I, in a lot of cases, you know, may be in approval of, you know, loosening things up a bit, but not in the case of DuckTales, you know, like, I would not have been happy. And I think one of the other things that I really loved about it is that with the voice acting and, you know, kind of adding a few more story elements, I know LOL story, but it really made the game feel like you're playing through, an, like, different episodes of DuckTales. Like, and I thought that was awesome.
You know, while I'm not really on board for story most of the time, and in the specific case of DuckTales, I did think they added a little too much. I will say one way they did succeed is that it actually really did feel like I was playing episodes of DuckTales. And that's what they were going for, and while that wasn't necessarily what I wanted, I have to admit they definitely had a job well done in terms of what they were trying to do. Like, well done to them.
Yeah. And I mean, the music that Vert did was just, of course, perfect. And I just really, really hope that we will see, you know, like Chippendale Rescue Rangers or Darkwing Duck, like we talked about, specifically those two. But, you know, any of those Capcom Disney games, I'd really love to see WayForward take those into their hands and put out that perfection.
Yeah.
Captain Spike, what was your number 5 game of the year?
Captain Spike's number 5 game of the year, the award for best game about teaming up with your IRL BFFs to rob pixelated banks, goes to Monaco. You know, it's sort of, I have to say, why I love this game was basically stated in the silly name I gave this award to the game, too. You know, it's really fun to coordinate with, you know, 3 of your friends. You each take a role on how to pull this heist, and, you know, sometimes you try to stick to the plan and stay unseen and play the game as straight as you can and just see if you can, you know, really pull off the perfect heist. And sometimes you get the heavy and you just try to break through a wall and say, fuck who sees me. And both are fun. Like, that's the important thing. This game is so much fun to play with your friends. And, you know, again, like I was saying with Gunpoint, it's, at its core, it's a puzzle game. But you're really sort of working to, you know, solve these complex challenges with a really diverse tool set in multiplayer cooperatively with your friends. I think it's very exciting. I really enjoy it.
If you
haven't played it, I'd recommend you check it out. That's Monaco.
Excellent.
Slaggy McWaggy, why don't you give me your number 4?
The best game about building up culture and dominating your friends with it goes to...
That's my favorite game.
Civilization V Brave New World. Okay, that's getting a little out of control. Woo!
You're getting to the good games. Of course the crowd is getting antsy.
I think really what Brave New World did for Civ 5 is it brought a much needed overhaul to the later stage of the game. I mean, not the problem, but one of the things that really makes the game feel very different than Civ 5 in its original form in its first expansion was that you really had to get ahead of the game early on in the game, or else you kind of really... You know, it's, I mean, not for every victory type.
But you could generally, you could fail in the first half hour of an 8 or 9 hour game.
And, you know, I think it really, not just with the, you know, culture victory, being overhauled, but, you know, I just really think it, there are other things like trade routes are really, like, you know, add another interesting aspect and, you know, I know it's caused me to play the game differently, because tourism increases if you open your borders up. I didn't open my borders up to Captain Spike, and then he, you know, declared war on me because he's a dick. But, you know, that's something that I would never even really thought of. I usually try to keep, you know, open borders and all that in the past, but it really, you know, causes you to think of using the existing mechanics in different ways, and I think that's really where it was a great success.
Yeah, no, I agree. I still think about, again, the open and closed borders
Right.
I just was like, okay, well, I mean, LOL, bye.
I mean, I think it really speaks to the fact that with Brave New World alone, I put another 30 to 40 hours, and I mean, I put over 100 hours of gameplay time.
Yeah, I'm hundreds of hours in on this game, like three or four, and at this
point... Which sounds crazy, but I mean, if it's a Saturday night, and you go out until 3-4 in the morning, I mean, it's easy to put in a 10-hour... I mean, a full game takes 10 hours, so...
Civ party next weekend?
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Excellent. Okay, no, I agree.
What is your number four game of the year?
Captain Spike's number four game of the year. The best game about inbreeding royal knights in order to get the best stats.
Ew!
Goes to Fire Emblem Awakening.
Woo! So that's the first repeat on our list this year.
It is, and you know, I'm not going to say too much about the game other than what you said. I'm coming from the exact opposite. This is like one of my favorite genres of games. And it still was challenging and fresh.
So your title could have been sending your inbred children to their death.
Yes, it could have been. To their permadeath. Sending your inbred children to their permadeath.
Sorry, please continue.
But, you know, I found the entire refinement of, like, the social, like, marriage system, I just found it really compelling. I ended up in my game... And I normally don't do something like this, but I ended up grinding everybody's social stats so that everyone married off to, like, the character I wanted them paired with.
Nice.
So, like, oh, yeah, my character, who is, like, a hillbilly, like, oh, he's with, like, the tough and plucky royal princess who doesn't like being a princess anymore. Like, I totally got into, like, that element.
I know which two you're talking about, but the one disappointment I had is that there was no gay marriage.
I agree, and I think it's only because the marriage system is used to produce offspring.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is there were romance options in the previous Fire Emblem game that we didn't get. The last DS one in Japan that didn't come over here. Because we did get one or two of the DS games, but not the last one.
Oh.
But my understanding is that it had gay romance options.
Hey.
Right.
Hey, my main character had a couple really strong bromances.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm a fan of the bromance.
Yeah.
Anyway, what is your number three game? This is where we're starting to get to top three, bitches.
Oh! The award for best game about raising elemental battle monsters for fun and profit goes to Pokemon X and Y. I mean, we just talked about Pokemon a couple of months back, on the episode that I hosted.
That one.
You know, I think really, if you want to know more about why I thought X and Y was so successful, go back and listen to that. But, you know, honestly, I felt it was more of a, relaunch or renewal or reinvigoration than Black and White was. Black and White, like I had said, you know, was great, but I really feel like X and Y feels more like home again.
That makes sense. I mean, you know, I understand what you mean. I don't know that it makes sense, but I understand what you mean.
I think that Mega Evolution is awesome.
Yeah, I like Megas a lot.
I think that really it's, you know, fully taking advantage of, you know, online capabilities and really just designed... with the 3DS in mind. And so, you know, I thought it was a great step forward. You know, not a gigantic leap forward. One small step for Ash. One giant leap for Pokekind. IDK, what was your number three game of the year?
Captain Spike's number three game of the year. This would be the best game about renting tools and becoming street art. Goes to The Legend of Zelda, Link Between Worlds.
I thought you were going
to
talk about that spray painting game we just talked about.
Mark Echo's Getting Up.
Ah! Woo!
No, it's alright. The moment is past. I don't know that I have a lot to say about it other than what you already said about this game. You know, this was our second repeat across lists. But the thing for me is that this is the game that really made me love Zelda again.
That's significant.
I am a Zelda fan, but I have really strayed over the years. There have been so many Zelda games that I've been like, this is rubbish. Or, like, I played Skyward Sword, and it was like, this is good, but No, there's no butt in Link Between Worlds.
There's no butt in Link Between Worlds?
Well, not like derriere, but...
Ah-ha-ha.
You know, I'm just... It's I unabashedly love it. I think it is a really compelling change from the norm, and it really reinvigorates me for what Zelda can be. Like, I'm really excited about Zelda again. And I think Nintendo knows that they need to step it up, and I think that they are trying to step up, and I think that they are succeeding in stepping up.
Yeah, I really feel like Aonuma-san really is, you know, starting to take charge and step it up.
Fraglick, what's your number two?
The best game about traveling through tears in space-time to deal with your emotionally scarred past goes to Bioshock Infinite. Woo! Of course, we devoted an entire episode. Our first Game Buoy Spotlight was for Bioshock Infinite. Just an amazing game. You know, really tackling some, you know, challenging themes. You know, and I mean, the Bioshock series we know is, you know, famous for doing these things already. But I mean, just a beautiful work of art. You know, visually gorgeous. You know, just doing so many amazing things. If you had not checked out Bioshock Infinite back when we did our spotlight, but have played it now, please go back, check out that episode. We had Space Pirate Ben guest, and I mean, really just, we dove into the, you know, deep layers that that game has, and I mean, really just one of the most captivating game experiences I had the whole year.
Excellent.
Captain Spike, what is your number two game of the year?
My number two game of the year, and our listeners may not be that surprised since I've talked about it somewhat in recent weeks. This was the best game about demons, penguins, and spreadsheets.
Okay, dude!
My number two game of the year goes to Disgaea D2.
Dude!
Okay, dude!
Okay, dude! What was it about, D2 that, Disgaea D2 that you love so much?
Everything? I mean, no, it's, you know, the game is simplified. It's probably the most simplified and accessible of all the Disgaea games.
Now that's interesting.
But it also has some really neat touches. Like, there's an in-game, like, hacking system where, like, you can change the stat values. Like, so, oh, I want battles from now on to be more difficult but give more experience. Or I want battles to be just as difficult and give more experience, but as a trade-off, they'll give off less money.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, you can really customize the experience. You can really grow your characters in the direction you want. There's a lot of quality of life simplifications to the way the game works, but the game is still just as deep. Like, you still do item world runs. You still put in hundreds of hours working on, you know, a single piece of gear that you want your characters to use. It's like while they were simplifying the game, they made it complex in different ways, which is what I like. I feel like some of these things were needlessly complex, and other things that they made more complex, like, yes, that's good because they were too simple before. So it's like almost like a whole rebalancing of the core values of the franchise, and for me, it's very compelling.
Excellent.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we have the same number one.
We do.
That means that this is GameBuoy.org's number one game of the year.
GameBuoy.org's number one game of the year.
And our game of the year is Super Mario 3D World.
Super Mario 3D World. The best game about traveling through pipes with your friends.
I have the best game about dressing up like a kitty and adventuring.
Meow, meow. Meow,
Mario 3D World.
Meow, 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 meow.
Super Mario 3D World.
Meow, 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 meow.
I first had the opportunity to play it at the Nintendo Best Buy E3 extravaganza.
And I made fun of you at the time.
At the time, I had described it as frantic.
Okay, how so?
Or organized chaos. But really, there's really a method to the madness. It really, truly feels like a perfect hybrid of something like Mario 64 and something like Mario 3. Like, it really blends the two, you know, kind of ways that we've seen the Mario franchise branch and brings them together. The multiplayer co-op really, like, works well. You know, I'm able to go deal with a Goomba while you go get the star or something. And, I mean, I just think that the level design is perfect. You know, I'm always... Mario games always have the chance of being, like, game of the year for me, but particularly this one just really hit all the marks, and, you know, I think a lot of people had been a little concerned about it. I mean, I know a lot of people had been disappointed that we didn't see Mario Universe or something like that, but, I mean, I think that this is, by all means, a mainline Mario game, and, you know, definitely worthy of being called a Super Mario game.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, I talked about this game on Koopa Club, so you should check out their archives if you really want my complete thoughts on this, but, you know, to give you the TLDR version, I went into Super Mario 3D World expecting the game to be a flop. I talked about this here on the show about how I was upset that we were getting this rather than Galaxy 3, when they first announced this game back last in November of 2013. So they announced it and released it the same year.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant they announced it, and I'm like, they didn't announce it in November.
No, they announced it in January of 2013. Yes, yes. And it came out in November of 2013. And, you know, when they announced it, I was very skeptical. I was very upset that we weren't getting a new Galaxy game. Now that I have played all the way through Mario 3D World, I would be okay with just getting another game like this. Like, I'd be okay if the next mainline Mario was another game in this style. I thought that the level designs were incredible. I thought that they were compelling. They were much larger and more exploratory than I expected them to be. Maybe they weren't quite as exploratory as I necessarily would have liked. Not the huge vistas of Mario 64 and Sunshine and Galaxy. But still, a more than enough exploration that there were secrets hidden away that I wouldn't have got if I wasn't looking for. And that's what I want out of these games.
Yeah.
I think they could expand on it. I think they could take their levels even bigger, certainly. But for the conceit, and playing this game multiplayer is just a pure joy. I thought it would be a downer, but it's so much fun and adds so much to the experience that I'm very fortunate to play with other people who are also very good at these games. So it becomes a real, like, this is a new way to make a Mario 3D game. I didn't think Nintendo had it in them.
Yeah. And I mean, one little thing that I was happy about is that Peach is finally back. Let's keep her back.
Or get rid of her for Rosalina. I like Rosalina.
Well,
I'm
just saying, there's no reason that going forward with any future new Super Mario Brothers games that we should not have Peach.
I'm sorry, what?
You remember with all the new Super Mario Brothers Wii and new Super Mario Brothers U, I've always been disappointed that we get two Toads.
The problem is, Peach has a different style of jumping.
Yeah, but I mean,
like, it would fundamentally change those games to have one character control differently.
Well, I would be interested in seeing how that works on a 2D plane.
And that's fine, but that's not what they're trying to make.
Alright, well, in any event, what they made with Mario 3D World was a real gem.
No, I certainly agree there. Alright, well, let's wrap this year up with two little segments now that we have done our top 10 and done Game Buoy's official game of the year.
Game Buoy's official game of the year!
New Year's gaming resolutions. My New Year's gaming resolution for 2014 is to buy fewer games and finish more of the games I do buy.
So maybe buy 100 instead of 200?
You know, I'm sitting here like, I didn't buy 200 games, but then I'm like, shit, I probably did. So, yeah, but you know, I had some life circumstance changes in the last few months, and I need to be a little bit better about my spending. And also, I feel like, how many games did I mention today that I'm like, oh yeah, I bought that, and I just played it for like an hour?
Yeah.
Like, that's not cool. I need to invest more of my time into these games and make more of an effort to see all of the content in these games.
Excellent. I kind of alluded to mine earlier in the episode. My resolution was, you know, in the last half of the year, I got a new job. I didn't have as much time for gaming. And I, like, you know, really felt like, you know, what am I doing on a video game podcast talking about games when I don't have as much time to play games anymore? And so that's why my resolution is to, you know, really make more time in my personal life for games, even if it's, like, you know, just, you know, a couple hours a week. You know, it's really something that's important to me and, you know, just for the balance of my personal life, so.
Oh, that's great. I think that's, I like your goal a lot. I hope that it comes to pass.
Thank you.
All right, well, with that having been said, let's wrap this up. Sidekick, what are your just two or three most anticipated games or gaming events or even just predictions for 2014? You know what? Let's spread this out. Give me one or two games or gaming events you're looking forward to, and then give me a prediction for 2014.
One of my most anticipated games is definitely Fantasia Music Evolved. You know, I love Harmonix, I love Disney, and, you know, I definitely look forward to playing that on my X-Bone. I mean, it just looks very magical.
Excellent.
You know, Titanfall is also one that I've got my eye on. I'm typically not a FPS sort of guy, but it looks really awesome. It looks really different. Most anticipated gaming events? You know, it's hard to tell what gaming... I mean, I guess a literal event is I'm looking forward to GamerX 2, but, you know, in terms of, like, actual events in gaming, you know, we don't really have any big launches coming up. I'm anticipating we're going to hear about some hardware revision for something. Who knows what it is, but, you know, it just seems about right. Predictions? You know, I predict the X-Bone's going to pick up speed a little bit. You know, once people, you know, realize that there's... Especially, I think, once Titanfall hits. I think that's going to bring a lot of people in, because they're going to want to, you know, play it looking as badass as possible.
Yeah, I definitely agree there.
You know, I do predict that the PS4 is definitely going to have some more games that, you know, at least for me, that I would want to go pick up a PS4. So I feel like a lot more people are going to be, you know, making the leap to both of these consoles. I predict that the Nintendo games that we're expecting over this year are going to be very well received, but I predict that they're not going to really boost sales the way that Nintendo's hoping, because, I mean, you know, we didn't see it this year. I don't predict that this year's going to do... I'm sure that it will do better. It will push more units, but I don't think it's going to be enough to stop people in the industry from saying that the Wii U is still a flop.
You know, I do agree with that, with the caveat that I still think Mario Kart 8 is a little bit of a wild card. Like, you look back at the Wii and Mario Kart Wii selling, like, 30 million units or something, and it's like...
Right.
If any game is going to sell a console, it's going to be Mario Kart 8. But I don't know that it's going to. Like, I don't... Like, short of, like, a huge price drop the week before Mario Kart 8 comes out, so people are like, oh, the Wii U is cheaper and Mario Kart 8. Shy of that, I agree with you completely. I'm really looking forward to Bayonetta 2. That is,
oh, duh.
That is by far my most anticipated game. That's probably, like, I've probably anticipated that game more than any other game ever, honestly. And, you know, I'm also really looking forward to hearing more about Kingdom Hearts 3.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's not a game. So I guess I could say that as an event is I'm looking forward to more information on Kingdom Hearts 3. I'm also really looking forward to E3 this year. I feel like we don't really know anything about any games that are coming out on the Bone, PS4, or even the Wii U after, like, March of this year.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Destiny, Watch Dogs. Like, I feel like that is literally all we know about.
More or less, yeah.
So, and oh, also, I'm really looking forward to Destiny.
Yeah, that looks great.
So I'm really, even more than usual, I'm really anticipating E3 this year, because, you know, now we're in the thick of it. We're now in the new generation completely, not just Nintendo. And I cannot wait to see what the future holds. Predictions are pretty tough for me right now. But I predict, and this is going to be a little strange, I think that GamerX and, you know, other diversity conferences in gaming, because, you know, I know there's a couple, and, you know, I think that between that and Anita Sarkeesian's video projects, Tropes Against Women in Games, I think we're going to see even more people and even more focus placed on the diversity in games issues. I think this year is going to be, like, if last year was the year that it really started to matter, I think this year, I hope this year, is the year that we really start to gain headway on making inroads on inclusion in games.
Yeah.
So, all right. With that having been said, I think that wraps it up for our conversation, and it's
indeed
time for...
Oh, I have one more prediction.
What?
It's going to be a great year for Game Buoy.
Yay! Oh, also, I totally forgot to talk about Towerfall. If you have an Ouya, that should be a game of the year.
Yeah, I definitely.
I didn't include it because, like, four people have played it, but it's so good.
It's really a little gem.
It's coming out on PS4 and Steam this year, so... Oh, that's something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
In any event, it's time for...
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
I'm just going to fire these off really quick because I'm getting hungry. I smelled bacon earlier.
Okay.
So, in some exciting Castlevania news, Castlevania Dracula X is rumored to be coming to Virtual Console. It's, of course, this is one of those... rating board, the Australian classification board, once again, has listed Castlevania Dracula X. This is, of course, a somewhat of a port of Rondo of Blood that, you know, it has a couple differences with levels and music and only lets you play as Richter Belmont. It's pretty rare to find because, you know, you could get it for the PSP remake, but really, you know, this is, would be a, another great way to play Dracula X, which was, you know, a pretty good game. There is a rumor that Guacamelee will be coming to PS4 and the Bone with new content. It will apparently add new content, like I said, greater visual polish. IGN brought us the rumor that they originally had an article that they pulled, and Drinkbox Studios is not ready to talk about any current projects, but will reach out to Joystick, who brought us this rumor, when they are ready. So, you know, that'll be great. I know Captain Spike had a good time with Guacamelee, so...
Yeah, I'm really hoping this turns out to be true, because that was such a cool game.
Yeah.
You know, again, it would have been, it was definitely a Game of the Year contender, but, you know, as you, you know, our two lists were so different, and we both had so many great games on our lists, it's really easy to forget, like, this was an incredible year for games.
Yeah.
And Guacamelee, man, that was a great one.
An oddity has appeared on Nintendo's North American release calendar in the form of Inazuma 11, which is a, role-playing soccer game, that things just don't add up. Tiny Cartridge was saying, you know, everything about this seems weird. Nintendo hasn't even announced anything about it. It doesn't specify which Inazuma 11 game it is. Inazuma 11 3 was brought out in Europe last September, but who knows if this was a glitch, a prank, or actually some credibility to this.
I'll be honest, I'm expecting it to have been a leak, and I think that there's probably going to be a Nintendo Direct at the end of the month. I don't know that, but I think that. And I think this game is going to be announced there.
Soccer fans, you have something to look forward to on the DS. 3DS. Thanks, Bill. My body's ready for that. a Steam database link has... brought some tidbits that Killing Floor 2, Blackman, Arkham Origins, Blackgate HD.
Did you just call Batman Blackman?
I hope I didn't. I said Batman, Arkham Origins, Blackgate HD. Battle Block Theater, Happy Wars,
Half Minute Hero 2,
Hero 30 Seconds, Half Minute Hero. That's a Hero 30 Seconds. That's such a clever title.
It really is.
So we'll see if these end up on Steam. Hero 30 Seconds. 30 seconds is half a minute, and second, like the second game, that's so clever. All right, so that was our rumor mill.
I said, hey, what's going on?
This week, I played a bunch of games. I played Tearaway. I played more Disgaea. I played more Dead Rising 3. It's really just more, aside from Tearaway, which is a really great game.
Give me more.
I also played the Bravely Default demo.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people have been playing that.
And I have to say, man, I knew I was going to like this game because I like what this game is. I mean, on a fundamental level, man, you give me an old-style Final Fantasy-style game with a job system and shit. Like, yeah, that's what I'm effing here for. Like, that's my life. So, you know, it's no real big surprise that I was all over this game, this demo. But I thought I would have some reservations. I don't really like playing demos that much. But no, I was pulling my 3DS at every darn opportunity because I needed more. You got that song stuck in my head, young man. So I definitely excited for Bravely Default. If you haven't played it yet, but you like old style Final Fantasy, check it out. It's a great experience. Slaggy McWaggy, why don't you tell me what up?
Well, like I said, I got my bone. So I've been playing Pickle 2. I've been playing Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag.
Oh.
And I've been playing Killer Instinct. So, you know, just putting in some bone time. Hey.
Whoa.
I also did pick up Dead Rising 3, but haven't had a chance to pop it in yet, so definitely looking forward to that, though. You know, that was kind of the killer app for me, really. I mean, but although I would really say that, you know, also Killer Instinct, that I put in time with it, is also another killer app for me, but maybe we could get some two-player co-op action going on Dead Rising.
Yeah, that'd be great, although I'd rather just play Civ right now.
All right, well, with that, it's time to move on to our social links. As always, you are welcome to tweet at GameBuoy.org, GameBuoy, D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuoy.org, and this .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
With any previous answers, and we'll still read those for any black backlog blokes and babes out there in Internet Radio Land.
Well done.
However, this week's question of the week was, this week we're talking about the 2013 Gaming Year in Review. What notable trends in gaming did you dig this year? What was your GOTY? And the Facebook bonus question was, what event or release defined the 2013 gaming year for you, for good or bad? And really, Facebook is where people flocked to this week, so I'm going to rattle off these responses. Ian from Koopa Club said, I thought it was awesome that indie gaming finally came in of its own. I thought that the scene finally grasped its voice and shoveled out some quality material. My GOTY is a close tie with Super Mario 3D World being runner-up. I'm cliche, but I'm going to go with A Link Between Worlds. Even being one of the most avid fans of the series, this title touched upon so many great parts about the series as a collective whole. I even turned around and played Hero Mode and finished it with only four heart pieces left to attain in 24 hours.
Yowza!
Yeah. Honestly, I'd find that the decision for Nintendo not to have an E3 conference steal the deal for me is a defining moment in gaming that they were going to yet again beat to their own drum. And definitely, I mentioned that as well. Awesome.
You make my heart beat to the beat of the drum.
Jeremy from Koopa Club said, I agree with Ian as far as the trends in gaming go. Indie gaming is very important for the health of the industry. You saw a lot of killer titles come out in 2013. My GOTY is Super Mario 3D World, without question, is maybe the most pure and best-designed platform I've ever played. Pair that with the fantastic visual presentation and the wondrous music, and bam, instant classic. Notable runner-up on the Indie Tip, Runner 2. I played the hell out of that game throughout the year and will most definitely playing more in 2013. Renee from Killer Queens from Outer Space podcast said, and we had been on our Castlevania episode, said it was definitely a great year for portable gaming, the 3DS specifically, with many titles that really showcased its capabilities and paired with good marketing that enabled the numbers to grow. Game of the Year, that's a tough one to answer since there were many games that shone, but I think I have to side with Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds. Not only was it revisiting the pinnacle of Zelda games, Link to the Past, but it also cemented the idea of retro gaming coming full circle on itself, being the same and having new features, so that players who didn't get a chance to play the original can get almost the same experience compared to those who did play the original. Good point. The event that stood out the most in my mind was the debacle of Microsoft's showing of the Xbox One. He actually wrote Microsoft, I don't know why I said MS's. In particular, the mess of the Killer Instinct demo, where a female gamer was told by a male to just take it and we'll all be over soon, since it really reflected the current struggles that female gamers still experience in primary online gaming. It might not be in the front of people's minds, but snide comments, unsportsmanship, and bullying still happen not only to females, but also members of the LGBT community. Definitely, as we touched on as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Austin Shepard said that my answer is a bit different. I believe that the most overlooked GOTY for me is Beyond Two Souls. Definitely got overshadowed by Last of Us. That's my input, not his.
That's a game that is really on my list of things I didn't make it to, but right. Really wanted to.
The experience it delivered was very unlike any game I have ever played. I love the idea of being able to toy with the characters and storyline as I watched it progress. It's not a game for everyone, but if you want to sit down for a good story starring some incredible actors, then this is a title for you. Reason it was overlooked? I think it had a bad release window that included Pokemon X and Y. Because let's be real, y'all, everybody's playing Pokemon X and Y. Everybody was, yeah, like to the tune of 4 million sold launch weekend. And last but certainly not least, kind of as a side note to this, April from California said, I don't have a 3DS, but these comments make me wish I did. Yeah, 3DS, I mean, we've always been trumpeting the 3DS here, but I mean, definitely after 2013, there is a really, really great 3DS library, both in terms of physical and digital. So definitely, I think every gamer, regardless of your allegiance to Nintendo, is really missing out if you don't have a 3DS. We didn't have a whole ton of other feedback. Fix Your Face on Twitter, better known as Jeremy from Koopa Club, asked, can you please base an entire episode around what you think Mary-Kate and Ashley would like to see in gaming?
I don't know if we can do exactly that, but I would be open to an episode on Mary-Kate and Ashley games.
Huh. LimeBlue3 over on Twitter, better known as Nicholas B, said, I second this motion. So, apparently, there's a thirst for some Mary-Kate and Ashley realness out there. Aside from that, that does it for our feedback. And, as always, we love your feedback.
We love it.
If you think we're super quiche, you can fucking... if you think we're super quiche, fucking quiche, you can fucking give us feedback on iTunes with your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews.
Fucking quiche.
Fucking quiche. You can like us on Facebook and change your relationship status to in a relationship with GameBooey.
Yeah, right?
We fucking love Twitter. Twitter is...
We fucking love Twitter.
Twitter is so fucking quiche.
No, Twitter is fucking quiche.
You can tumble with us on Tumblr, plus one us on Google. You can send an email to mailmovie@gamemovie.org.
Mailmovie@gamemovie.org.
And for those of you who can't understand us when we talk in fucking weird voices like that, that's mailmovie@gamemovie.org.
Mailmovie@gamemovie.org.
It doesn't help that you did it in another weird voice.
Mailmovie@gamemovie.org. It doesn't help that you talked over me in your weird voice.
Our home base is
mailmovie@gamemovie.org.
Home base is GameBooey.org.
GameBooey.org.
Where you can find all our social links. With that, I'd like to toss it over to Captain Spike for some shout-outs.
dun 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 dun.
The baby babies.
As ever and always, I'd like to shout out to the Koopa Club video game podcast.
Koopa Club, that's Koopa with a Q Club, okay?
I don't know why I just brain farted. Anyway, you know, they're great. I love what they do. You know, we always, they're like our podcast sisters.
From other misters.
Why are podcast mama be so promiscuous, though? I also want to shout out to VG Realness, Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. I also want to shout out to Geek Charisma, a podcast that is everything geek with discussions on movies, DVDs, video games, conventions, and comics. In addition, I'd like to shout out to Neshoba Talks With You About Games. I think we typically refer to this as the NPR of the indie gaming podcast scene right now.
Indeed.
And, you know, my understanding is that they're finally recording new content, so...
Yeah!
Woo!
As ever and always, I want to shout out to Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal so many of my cues. Man, I need to steal one of those voices. I'm starting to lose mine. I also want to shout out to the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore, starring our good friend Wicked, without whom we literally would not be podcasting today.
That's some nice alliteration.
And last, but most certainly not least, the Retrograde podcast. You know, they're also great. I love what they do. They sort of look at retro games one at a time and really dive deep into them. Slagkick, how about you do your shoutouts?
Take us to a game bar.
I wanna take you to a game bar!
Volume.
Bitch, no one lives downstairs anymore. I can be as loud as I'd like.
Oh. Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary in the style of a gay video game Prairie Home Companion. They're saucy and southern, y'all, and y'all should check it out. Nerdgasm Network is the wildest shock jock video game radio show you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, along with OLR, you will find Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on World of Warcraft, and Horde House, the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. Formerly a World of Warcraft show, but nobody on there really plays World of Warcraft anymore. So they're serving you up some online gaming realness. Video Game Outsiders, the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. And last, but certainly not least, the Nerd Podcast. That's Nerd with a G, a silent G, where you can check out pop culture rants from a gay nerd perspective. We'd also like to continue pouring out an ever-flowing 40 for...
Ever-flowing 40.
Sounds like a sublime, like, rarity.
It really does.
To Zelda Reorchestrated, who did our wonderful theme music. And, you know, with that, thank you for tuning in. I think the highlight of Game Buoy's 2013 was all of you coming along for the ride on the SS Game Buoy.
And meeting so many of you at Gamer X this year. If I had to pick one specific moment of the year that was my real moment of the year, both in my personal life and my podcast life, I have to be honest, it would be our panel at Gamer X.
Indeed.
It was a real pleasure to talk to you all, and I cannot wait for Gamer X 2 to try and do it again.
So thank you so much for sticking with us through last year. And we really can't wait to have you come along with us in 2014. Got some great things planned. So look for us in a couple more weeks, as per the usual. And with that, take us out, Captain Spike.
As ever and always, thank you kindly for your time. We really appreciate it. We will see you again in the immediate future. But in the meantime, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And Shinwa Kaigen.
Shinwa Kaigen.
What does that mean?
You're quiet.
And the mics are hot.
Take me to your manhood. Take me to your manhood. Take me to your penis. Your penis. Your penis.
Sorry, I smelled bacon.